Welcome to the Cutter's Notch podcast, hosted by author Michael DeCamp and his family. Recorded in the Cutter's Notch studios, this podcast explores anything related to creativity. You'll find interviews with creative people, such as authors, artists, and performers, as well as friendly banter about any number of topics. Turn up the volume, listen, and catch up on what's happening in Cutter's Notch.
Hey, Cutter's Notch podcast listeners, we're back!
Yay!
I'm Mike DeCamp, your host, and I'm here with Nancy.
Hello.
I'm our wonderful co-host, and we have a special guest with us today, a friend of the podcast. This is now her third visit. Karen Elaine is here. Hello, Karen.
I can't believe you guys keep having me back. Thank you so much.
You're like a bad penny or whatever, right?
I enjoy this so much.
Well, we enjoy having you here for sure.
So we took an unplanned hiatus. Folks, we didn't expect to have 6 or 8 weeks between episodes.
Life happens.
The advantage is I got my voice back.
Yes.
So
the last several that we did, he was like, just kind of barely speaking. And it was kind of like,
I had a bad case of laryngitis, and we, right in the middle of it, we recorded like 2 or 3 podcasts.
Yeah.
Our listeners cannot see my face right now, but it's dismay, concern, disbelief. It's a lot of things going on right there right now.
Right.
So Nancy was in charge.
He was like, I'm going to try. And I'm like, I don't think you should. And me being the driver, we've got to get these done. They're scheduled. We've got to do this, you know?
So she took the lead, and I got to tell you, it was hard. It was hard letting her take the lead, but she takes the lead most of the time, and I just pretend like I'm in charge. But we're glad to have you back, Karen, and we're glad to be back.
Yep.
And we're going to have a little fun with this conversation, as we always do when Karen is here. So before we jump into all that, we have to do our creative indulgences.
Yes.
Nancy, what's your creative indulgence?
So I've done a lot of things, but one of the things I'm going to share is I read a book recently by Marilyn Crete. And it's called The Box Must Be Empty.
I think we're going to try to have Marilyn on the show.
I'm getting to that. Don't steal my thunder.
Oh, sorry. Oops.
But
she's still in charge.
The title is The Box Must Be Empty, a memoir of complicated grief, spiritual despair, and ultimate healing. And it's her personal story and journey. I know Marilyn personally, and so it was interesting to see what she went through, worked through. And as Mike said, we have talked to her, and she's been on podcast before for another book, but plan to have her on in the near future. But one of the things that came out of it is she recommended in her book, something that helped her it's called the Grief Recovery Handbook. And it's an action program for moving beyond death, divorce, and other losses, including health, career, faith, friends. And several listeners know, but I lost my mom this several months ago, and it's had a profound impact on me. And reading this book is great because it really talks about the difference. So for any of you who have any type of grief or loss, like I said, it could be friends, job, what have you. It talks about we too often try to deal with grief intellectually when grief is really being heartbroken and an emotion. So how do you walk through those steps to live through it kind of thing? So highly recommend both of those books. I guess maybe not a happy-go-lucky creative indulgence, but I think a very impactful one for me. So I've enjoyed that.
And a very important one.
Yes.
Because I lost my mom last fall, and it's the first person that I was that attached to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I wasn't prepared to be so broken.
Yeah.
And I didn't know what to do about it. And I wish my youngest Kelsey would come on this podcast with me because she's amazing. I had actually invited her to come today, and she's like, not my thing. Because I talked to her about what I was feeling.
Right.
And she said, I think maybe you need a process.
Mm-hmm.
You need to do something to move through this. So I thought, I'm going to get a tulip tree because that has deep meaning to me, my mother, my father.
Right.
And I'm going to get some of her ashes because a weird thing my sister offered was some of my mom's ashes. I'm like, that's weird. But then I thought, no, this will be good ceremonially,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And so the ashes got shipped to me. The tree came. And the funny thing was, as soon as the ashes arrived, I was fine.
Yeah. You can't predict these things,
Yeah. It turned out I didn't need a process. I needed a place.
Yeah.
And her ashes sitting there in that stupid funerary box, you know, the plastic one with the label.
Yeah.
There she is. I have a place now. It's like what a headstone does for you or a ceramic urn. And so I had the Iron Timbers guys. Gary, the dad, is a wood carver extraordinaire. And he carved a box for me, which is ready.
Yeah.
And I just need to go pick
it up. Nice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And I planted the tulip tree. And whenever I'm by the tree, I do talk to my mother. And frequently just talk to her. The ashes are in the bedroom and just talk to her there. And that, so what was, I'm sorry, this is not my creative indulgence. I totally took this off track. You may need to edit this,
but this is important for
people.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And we'll come back to your creative indulgence when this segment is full.
So what did you do, Nancy, that helped the most?
I think I'm still in the process. And I think the surprising thing is I was extremely close to my dad. I mean, we could sit in a room and not say a word and have an entire conversation. We just thought and approached the world very much the same way. And I had told Mike 10 years ago when dad passed away, and I was really the main caregiver point of contact for mom. We didn't have a bad relationship. It's just that dad and I were just same people, right? Kind of thing. But I said, I have a feeling when mom goes, it's going to be tough.
You know what I think it's like is when the last kid goes to college. I think when we lose our first parent, because my dad went first also, I still had my mom.
Yeah.
And that makes it okay in a way, right? You haven't lost everything. You don't feel bereft.
Right.
And it's sad, but I don't know. I think it's, you know, because when my last kid went to college, I was bereft. And it's not the same at all, but emotionally, it seems very similar because it's a kind of loss.
It is. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, she was 1 month short of turning 96.
Wow.
Mentally, she was there. Just physical challenges and needed a lot more assistance, especially over the last year of her life. While it was at that age totally anticipated, it did happen quickly.
Very fast.
But you know, and still, you know, all the things that you say of, you know, she lived a great life and she didn't really suffer. It was a quick, you know, kind of thing. All of it was true. So grateful for all of those kinds of things. But still, I have found that her loss has been more, and there's different triggers, different things that remind me of it. And I think, like I said, still working through that. I find that I developed a fierce respect for who she really was. The trials and challenges that she had in her life, the way that she impacted people. She wasn't flamboyant and big. She was the straight man between her and dad, but the things that she did, you know, it's just very motivating.
I was asked to do the eulogy for her funeral. And as I thought about her, the catchphrase that I came up with for her was that she, instead of wearing her faith on her sleeve, she wore her faith on her apron because of the way she served.
She was always, and she viewed hospitality. I mean, it was nothing for her to have 50 people over for dinner. Now, it was something. I saw all that she did kind of thing.
But you know. But she acted like it was nothing.
Yes.
Because that was her way of serving. Yeah. I get it.
So both very good books.
This is going to be a 3-hour podcast.
I'm so sorry,
Mike. We might have to pause and do part two, right?
It'll go where it goes. So Nancy, share the title and the authors of that book again for the listeners.
Of the grief,
I'm sure there,
the grief
yes, book? I'm sure there are a lot of people out
it's
there.
It's called The Grief Recovery Handbook by John W. James and Russell Friedman. Founders of the Grief Recovery Institute. And I did, like, when dad, there's like grief workshops a lot of churches will host or whatever, and didn't hold as much meaning for me. I mean, they were good, but this book, it goes through talking about the difference in what grief really is. And then you can do it by yourself, or you can choose to have someone who would be a safe space that you would talk through those emotions. And mm-hmm. I actually got this book for a couple of friends, as well as my youngest daughter, which surprisingly has had her since high school, right?
I think so.
Since yeah. high school. Multiple. So yeah, multiple losses of friends. And I was like, hey, I think you this. So she and I have talked about, you read like the first six chapters and then it opens up for discussion and stuff. And so that's our next step, is that we are going to just kind of talk through those things mm-hmm. together, because it's like, wow, she's been slammed at a young life with a lot of losses. And not just friends, but it has been a lot of friends that she's lost, but other things. And so, I don't know. It's to me, who's someone who, like you need something to do.
Yeah.
You need to figure it out intellectually, but yet there's emotion involved.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, it's grief. It's not crippling, but it hits you.
Right. Yeah. Right. And it's surprising to me still, the things that will remind me of my mother and make me cry.
Yeah.
There are also things that remind me of her that make me laugh.
Yes, yes.
And I am my mother's daughter, and I am becoming my mother.
Right.
And there was a time that would have made me mad. Like, you know, all of us in our late teens were like, I hate my parents.
Yeah, yeah.
But she and I were such good friends mm-hmm. as adults.
Yeah.
That I can't imagine turning into anyone better than my mother.
Yeah.
I just can't.
Yeah.
She's fantastic. So, my creative indulgence.
Yes.
I was going to ask you if you wanted to follow that or if you wanted me to do it.
Well, I've been doing a lot of reading lately. I read on tape, on drives.
Yeah.
Victor Hugo.
Oh.
Oh my gosh. He's so wordy. In the best way. Like, his little side stories are entire units of a book, like six chapters long, and it's a side story. But then eventually it all comes around and it's all completely essential. And I had no idea Les Miserables and The Hunchback of Notre Dame were the stories they actually are. I had no idea, because I just know the Disney version.
Right.
Which is not the story.
Yeah, yeah.
But Kelsey, my youngest, has started a family book club.
Oh, fun.
Oh, wow.
Which is super fun. I love that she started a book club. And so for that, we're reading Collapse. What's the author's name? Diamond. And it's about the collapse of societies. And I've gotten through, I'm not going to get into details, but the other book I just finished reading, because the author was here through Indiana Humanities, Tess Gunty, and she gave a little talk.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I can't go see the talk until I finish the book. A book called The Rabbit Hutch. And Tess is from South Bend, Indiana. I call her Tess like I know her.
Right.
Miss Gunty. Very, very, very smart. And she taught me a new word in the lecture, polyphonic, as it applies to literature. I'd never heard that expression. It's when you have multiple voices in a story.
Uh-huh.
And she does have multiple voices. The story is very complex and it's very layered. And my daughter and I, she was reading it on the beach, and when she'd walk away from the book, I'd pick it up and read it. And I'm a really fast reader, so I'm busting ahead of her. I'm trying to get it done. And when she was done, we got home, she lent it. The very opening scene in the book, it seems like someone's getting stabbed to death. That's what it seemed like to me. And Kelsey finished the book first and said, okay, so you're this far along. Do you think, now that you know all that you know, do you still think that that person got stabbed to death? It's like, yeah. There was a knife. There was blood. She left her body. And anybody who's going to read this book, I'm not ruining it, because this is the opening page.
Right.
There's a knife. There's blood. She leaves her body. And I said, what else could it be? And then you find out what it is.
Oh.
And I'm not going to tell you whether she dies or she doesn't die.
We'll have to check that one out.
But you do find out. And the writing is, there is a line that will stay with me forever. She's describing how someone felt. Have you ever been in like an emergency department waiting room? And you're waiting for your turn and you get up to go get a drink of water, and whatever's wrong with you, you're all out of sorts. Mm-hmm. And she says, I felt like a bag of loose soil. And if you're a gardener,
yeah,
you know exactly what she's talking about. Yeah. And even if you're not a gardener, you have experience with soil. And that is, you just feel like you're all falling apart inside and somebody just needs to hold you together. And even though there's a skin sack, it doesn't feel sufficient.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's just the best example of how smart her writing is. Like, oh, such a good simile.
I love that. I love authors that there's, you don't want them to be too wordy, but who able to add layers.
Yes.
Layers to it.
Yes.
So.
You know, this is one thing I love about this segment in our podcast is we discover new authors mm-hmm. and new
works. Musicians, new mm-hmm. shows, yeah. what have you. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Well, Mike, how about you?
Well,
Mike.
Yeah. Right. We're covering all the bases over here.
We haven't recorded a podcast in 2 months, so I've got all kinds of things to share.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I'm going to try to limit it to two. So one, I've been reading Kurt Vonnegut. Have you ever read Kurt Vonnegut?
I have read Kurt Vonnegut, and I couldn't tell you which of his books I've read. I'm so sorry.
I'm actually not in the middle. I'm very close to the end. You can see where my bookmark is of his book, Breakfast of Champions, which was written in 1973.
I'm going to borrow Mike's book for a second and see if this
she'll
is
read
one
it
I've
through
read.
The podcast. Yeah.
And I got to tell you, it is the craziest book I've ever read. I have never read a book that was written the way Breakfast of Champions is written.
Because he has some illustrations.
He has lots of illustrations. He really doesn't follow any novel rules. And it's kind of an allegory on culture, American culture in the late 60s, early 70s. And a lot of things about race relations and stuff, but he uses the N-word a lot, and it's just uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable for me to read it because it's just so in your face. But I don't think he's using it with the intention of being derogatory himself. I think he's making a statement, and yet I'm trying to find the redeeming qualities of the book as I'm reading it. So I'm not there yet. So it's,
well, I think part of it is you have to put yourself in the time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So
yeah, 70s. Yeah.
Right. You have to put yourself there and say, I'm going to use our 70s approach to cultural morality. And what is he trying to say? His writing to me seems so energetic. Mm-hmm. And so I think you have to be up for it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This is not a lean back. This writing engages you and makes you think.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's just, I was like, I think I'm trying to figure out who the actual narrator, I think the narrator is kind of a version of himself. And he actually ends up being a character in the book. And it's really kind of, it's just a strange book. So
I don't think Breakfast of Champions is one I've read because it didn't, when I read the first lines, I didn't immediately remember, oh yeah, I know this book.
Well,
yeah.
And most know what Slaughterhouse-Five mm-hmm. is probably most popular. Then there's a Cat's Cradle. And I was just kind of flipping through on my phone here at some of the others. I was like, okay, I've heard, I've not read, you know, a lot, but so ones now that I'm recognize.
Now I'm going to have to read Breakfast of Champions next.
No,
listen to it on tape.
Yeah,
I'll probably have it finished this weekend. So if you want to borrow it, you can borrow it as soon as I'm done.
Okay.
But the other thing was a TV show. And I don't know if I've shared. It's been so long since we've done this. I may have shared about this show before. But right now I'm just enjoying the heck out of Joe Pickett on Paramount.
I don't have Paramount and I don't know anything about this. Tell us about it.
Neither do I. So tell me.
Do you know who do you know Longmire?
No.
The TV show? It's on Netflix.
Because it's based on a series of books, right?
Yes. It's based on a series of books. Longmire is a series of books about a sheriff in Wyoming, modern day sheriff. Very, very good. And I'm not going to go there because I can't remember the details right now. I got books somewhere. But CJ, I think it's CJ Box, I think is the author of the Joe Pickett, series. But they've got a new show. It's on, Paramount. It's in season two and I'm right at the end of the second season and they do one whole like mystery each season.
Okay.
So it's not episodic. It's more, you know, a whole series. It's one story across the whole season. And it follows a park, basically a wildlife like a DNR guy.
Okay.
In Wyoming. And so he's in the mountains. He's around the hunters. He's, you know, he's in this rural Wyoming area, lives in this little town. And he's just the most honest, sincere, caring person. But he's surrounded by all these, in some cases, sort of diabolical people that and there's murder mystery involved. And it goes up in the mountains. And I really love the mystery of it. So it's just called Joe Pickett.
It is CJ Box. I did confirm.
I'm digging for a writing utensil so I can write this down on my notes for today.
Yeah. So
because I bet I can buy the season. Like if it's on Paramount.
Yeah.
Amazon probably sells.
Probably.
Yeah. So Joe Pickett is the name of the show, and based on a series of books by CJ Box. I'm going to have to read the books because I've heard that the books are even better.
Well, usually they are, right?
But the guy who plays Joe Pickett, he does such a tremendous job.
It's a good job.
Yeah. Yeah. Tremendous job.
You know, I was trying to fall asleep last night and I clicked on something and it was Orlando Bloom.
Ha.
And I thought, oh, he's a good actor. I'll watch this.
Yes.
They didn't give him a good vehicle.
Oh, really?
I went right to sleep.
What was it? Elizabethtown or something?
No, Carnival Row. On Amazon Prime.
And he's in that?
Yeah. He's the main male protagonist. I mean, I'm only on episode one. I fell asleep after half an hour. But it just seems, it seems like it's been done before. Everything seems like I've heard, they've taken six different stories and shuffled the deck and put them back together. So it doesn't, so far. I always give everything a chance because sometimes it's a slow build. But just... acting can make a huge difference because you can have a bad story and you get someone like Nicolas Cage who gives his all to a bad story. And you're like, but that's good acting.
Right.
I watched his new vampire movie.
Did you like it?
Renfield.
I need to watch. I'm just a huge fan. I love everything he does. I don't care how bad the movie is. I think he's fantastic.
I think it's one of those cases. You know, he does a tremendous job as... he's kind of the modern day Christopher Lee from Hammer films. He's kind of a version of that is as Dracula in this movie. But the movie's really about his guy Renfield, who has been with him for a very long time now. But he really doesn't want to be who he has become, and he's in like this support group, and he's trying to get out. And it's a little bit. It's kind of campy and it's a bit gory, but I think that Nicolas Cage does a fine job as Dracula. I wouldn't mind seeing him in a serious Dracula version.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's only semi-serious in this one.
Right. Yeah.
What was the TV show about vampires?
Oh, there's been several, but...
And it was, there was an energy vampire. What was the name of it?
Oh, that one I don't...
I can only think of the
Things We
soap
Do in the Dark.
Yes, Things We Do in the Dark.
I can only think of the soap opera from like when we were children.
Dark Shadows.
Yeah, Barnabas Collins.
Yes. And you know, it's funny. I have a couple shows that I fall back on that I'm working my way through. Dark Shadows is one of them.
Yeah.
And then also X-Files. I'm working my way through X-Files. The old X-Files.
We loved that back in the day.
That's where the monsters really are real, but nobody knows it.
I know. Well, and the government conspiracies are real.
Yeah.
The truth is out there.
Having worked for the government, I don't think they could manage a conspiracy.
Right, right. People think they're so much more organized than they are.
Like the tobacco industry, 100% they can manage. Pharmaceuticals, yes, they can manage conspiracies.
The government?
Government? I don't think so.
But maybe their impression of being disorganized and ineffective is a camouflage for the real.
It goes that deep? Oh my gosh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Somebody made a comment on some social media thing and they said, Karen, I just think you should run things. And I said, wah-ha-ha-ha-ha. I'm like the deep state. I've been running things all along. And you just didn't know.
She's the real power.
I'm like, no. It would be a lot more organized and done if we had done it, right, Karen?
Oh, my gosh. Wait, and we're going to segue into season 8 right now.
Yes.
Because, wait, I have to get my glasses.
Well, you segue, I got to tell you, while you're getting your glasses, that you were talking about vampires. My new book that I am almost finished with is a vampire story.
I love vampire stories.
And as we segue, for many listeners out there, you know already, and like you've said, you've been on this show, this podcast several times.
Yes.
Karen Elaine.
Hi.
Part of the show, Good Bones.
Yes, on HGTV. And yes, we are going to premiere season 8 on August 15th, 9 p.m. Eastern. Awesome. Which is very exciting. It's, yes, a long time coming.
Yes.
Because I'm looking at my notes to see when we started season 8. I will remind everyone, we're doing this podcast in July of 2023. And we started season 8 in April of 2021.
Oh my goodness.
That's when we did demo on the first season 8 house. And it literally took 2 years to finish that house. And so when Nancy made the joke, if we were doing this, it'd be better. I think it would. And we have a bunch of houses, 1, 2, 3 that took a year. And then we have 8 months, 7 months. And then my baby kitten, Kelsey, who I've mentioned before, mm-hmm, she has been living in my house for the last year. And she found her next house. And so Mina said, hey, let's do it for the show. So we did. And we took down a load-bearing wall.
Oh, wow.
Painted the outside, did all kinds of things to the inside, and really, really changed the look of,
right,
the house.
Major.
And that got done in a month.
Explain that, right?
I don't know how that happened, but literally that was the quickest one.
Did you guys run into challenges with the pandemic?
It wasn't
And post-pandemic in terms of supply?
It wasn't really pandemic issues that I'm aware. And the first thing I need to say is I am no longer part of Two Chicks and a Hammer.
Right.
Mina and I founded the company. And in the beginning of season 5, I think it was, she bought me out of the company and I retired from the company. Mm-hmm. So I don't have any input in any decisions that are made by the company, which is absolutely 100% fine with me.
Sure, sure.
Let the kids run the show. Mm-hmm. It's their turn. Mm-hmm. I am still on the show,
right,
which is completely different. And the way it works is someone tells me to show up and do something. And I do.
and just for those out there who just can't seem to keep that clear, you're retired from the actual construction business.
Correct.
But you're not retired from the TV show.
Correct. There's still a commitment.
Yes.
Yes.
And the way we made that on TV was like, I'm this, this elder states person who will come in and be a helper.
Right. Right.
Whatever you need, I'm here for you. Mm-hmm. Because isn't that what grandmas do? Mm-hmm. Oh, you need, mm-hmm, me to watch the dog, which I'm doing for one child right now. You need me to watch the kids. You need me to watch the house. You need me to water the plants. You need me to fly to San Francisco, get in a giant moving truck with the dog and the hamster and all the plants that has a flatbed trailer with your van and drive it here to Indianapolis.
Country, yeah.
Oh, you need me to do that? Great. Okay. I'm the girl.
Yeah,
I'm the girl.
Yeah.
And I don't need to get paid for any of that because, right, I'm grandma.
That's right. That's right. It's part of the contract with
and
motherhood.
I love a road trip. I just love it. So it was super fun. So that's, you know, it's the same on the show. Oh, somebody's going to do landscaping without me? I don't think so.
Right.
I don't think so. We're not going to let that happen because that's not a good plan. Or we're not doing demo without me because I need to go through this house and see
your treasures.
What's here and what can we do with it? Mm-hmm. And this is such a good story. So the house that took the longest, which was on Iowa, was full of treasures. There were so many things.
Oh, wow.
And over the 2 year period that we worked on this house, I had bought and then sold my little shop.
Right.
And a lot of the stuff was stored there. And I told production, come get all the things, because I don't have any place to save them anymore. And I thought they did. And then I called a local Audrey's. It's a, mm-hmm, antique store.
Right.
And I said, you come get all the rest of the things. Anything you want, come get. Because I don't have a place for all this anymore. Well, when it came time to look for the treasures for the Iowa house, there was one thing we had for sure, which is this giant electronic dartboard. So okay, it's like 8 feet high and 2 feet wide and 2 feet deep. And you throw these little soft nose darts at this kind of Velcro-y thing and it all lights up, whatever. But the electronics didn't work anymore. So Austin and I took it apart and we made a resin clock out of it because we thought that'd be cool. And as it turns out, I don't know everything. And I didn't know that there's two kinds of resin. And one kind, if you pour it more than a half an inch thick, will get so hot it will boil.
I have a friend who's just started getting into resin. And she was telling me recently, I started a couple of fires. I don't want my husband to know. But
Right? So we make this beautiful. It came out really great. When we poured it all, it looked fantastic. And I come back an hour later and it has boiled out of the mold. And it's just this, it's a mess. It's an absolute mess. And I don't know if it's going to make the episode or not. I sure hope so. I hope you see it because Austin and I come back and we're like, oh no, what have we done? And our friends at Iron Timbers educated me and said, you have to use deep pour resin. It doesn't get hot like that. It cures much slower. Oh, okay. Now we know. Because I thought there's some chemical in all this crap we put in here that I didn't know. So we made another clock. And in my opinion, it looked like crap. I really was not happy with how it looked. It wasn't artistic at all. Mm-hmm. And so we just bought a clock and gave it to the homeowner. You're like, these are all horrible. Now, there are a lot of scenes that got filmed about that clock that I wasn't there. So I have no idea how this is going to show up on TV. Because what our production company does, and they're really good at, is they may film one scene a bunch of different ways so that the editors have a choice how they want to play it. And every single scene they film is true. It's all true. It all happened. We did this. But how we tell the story, right?
Right, right.
We edit our stories and we tell the good parts. Mm-hmm. And so they're really good at getting the good parts. Mm. So I'm going to watch season 8 myself because I'm curious.
How it all plays out.
I have some information of, this scene was filmed two different ways and this scene was filmed three different ways. And I want to see which one shows up and how they edited it because I'm just so curious. And normally I can't watch myself because the hardest thing I do every day is get dressed. Mm-hmm. And it was hard work today, even though no one's going to see me.
Oh, I forgot to tell you
Right? I'm like, I don't know what to wear. Oh my gosh, it's so hard. I don't know why. And sometimes I fail for television, for international television. I put on clothes and when I see myself, I think, who let you go out of the house like that? Did no one tell you not to do that? Or I say something or I do something that a sensible person would not have said or done. So I just hate it.
And of course, that's what they put in.
Yeah, of course, because I'm an idiot and we all enjoy that.
It's good TV.
I found that with each passing year, opportunities to be humbled seem to amplify.
I think it's very,
but I'm okay with it now. Yeah, at a younger age, I might have been much more distraught.
Well, the way I look at it is, I learned early on that I need to give other people grace because I need so much of it.
Right.
And you know, the universe balances things out. Yeah, it's not a quid pro quo, but what you put out there is definitely what you get back. Right. Yeah. In some way or another.
Whatever you want to call it.
So, you know, I used to be really buttoned up and I did everything exactly so. I'm a perfectionist. And if I made a mistake, I would just spiral. I mean, I would just beat myself up so badly. And someone showed me some grace when I made a mistake. And I thought, oh, that's much nicer.
Right.
Right. So when other people showed up late for court or whatever, I would be happy to be gracious. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we're all doing our best, right?
That's right. That's right.
But my best is never enough. Never. So there's fun stuff in season 8. We get to see Tad build his house with his girlfriend, Anna. There's the most adorable ducks you ever want to see. And they are just so cute and sweet together. She's just the nicest. And apparently, we were one fetus at some point, or somehow we share DNA. I don't know how, because at the same moment, we will both break out in song, same song.
Really?
And start dancing same dance together. And that happened twice on set. And we didn't.
You and who?
Me and Tad's fiance, Anna.
Oh, okay.
There would be something happening and just the song would come to us like I could have danced all night. And then we start dancing the waltz around. And I can't remember the other time it happened where we were just singing the same song and dancing. And I'm like, I love you so much.
When he was here recently, he shared us the proposal.
Oh.
And I was just like, you're not my son, but I'm just so proud of you mm-hmm. for what you did. Mm-hmm. I was like, good for you.
And his house that the two of them built together, he made so many decisions that as he was making them, I thought, oh, this is such a terrible decision. Like the walls are this dark green color mm-hmm. called porpoise, which I don't understand why it's called porpoise. And you know what? It looks fantastic. And I had to own that. I just told him that. This is fantastic. You did a great job.
He's invited me to come over and check it out. So I'm going to need to do that.
You should go take a look. Yeah. I mean, he made some really dramatic, beautiful stone statements, and there's some cabinetry that's unbelievable. But because the ceilings are high and the rooms are spacious and there are long sight lines, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. you don't feel cramped or closed in by these moody, rich colors.
Right, right.
So it's fantastic. And you get to see Kelsey's house, which is super fun. And what else do we get to see? You get to see some absolutely abominable landscaping. Like, I landscaped a house in Irvington, and it was getting warmer and warmer and warmer. And then we had a really cold snow freeze and it looked like the plants were dead. So when the painters came, they just stomped all over them.
Oh man.
And they were not dead. And what the production company did for me is just put some shrubs in to make it look like good. There were plants there. Yeah, yeah. And it looks absolutely horrible. It looks, even with the shrubs, I'm like, oh my God, people are going to see this. But if we'd given it even 3 months, the oak leaf hydrangeas I planted would have revived. Even though they'd gotten stamped all over, they would have come back from the roots and you would have seen what was going to happen, but we don't have that much time on TV.
Yeah.
So there's some really, really bad landscaping. There's some, as I already told you, there's some bad projects. Of course, there's some Project Go Rogue and Don't Tell Mina and Just Do What You Want. Because she, you know, she's the business person, so she's the fun killer. So that's going to happen.
You're going to push the limits. She's going to try to rein it back in. Yeah. That's the nature of it.
Right, exactly. Right? Good luck, Mina. Good luck.
That's the whole drama in the show, right? So whether it's you or whether it's Corey or Tad.
Yeah. So is Kelsey on the show with her house?
Yes.
In terms of like reveal or that kind of part of it?
And for that, I think I have this memory that there was a shackle around my ankle and a very heavy chain and a bolt in the floor, because I felt like I was there for 4 weeks and never left. Nothing to eat, nothing to drink, just painting. That's all I was doing. Just, and what I took away from that is I would never, ever, ever advise anyone to paint their kitchen cabinets. It's the worst decision you can make.
It is a challenge.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Unless, I mean, somebody
did it.
We did it, but we did not personally do it.
Yeah, if you hire someone to do it.
Yeah.
And,
but I've heard that from other people too. Yeah.
These were some sort of, just getting them sanded was so much work. And I had to take them outside to sand them because we couldn't get all that dust in the house. So there's a lot of moving parts.
Yeah.
And then all the pieces, all the hinges, all the mm-hmm, screws, where did mm-hmm. someone put those? And priming and getting everything smooth, because I'm a perfectionist.
I'm still seeing that out there in terms of trends.
I know. People are saying, here's the thing. I used primer and I used cabinet paint and I used a product called Floetrol, which smooths out the brush lines. Mm-hmm. So the finish is beautifully smooth. I mean, I really put a lot of effort into this.
Sure.
And you can do it. Like, you could use chalk paint and not prime it, because that stuff will stick to anything.
Right, right.
And so you can get a quick finish that's a lot easier that I think would do, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But that's not what she wanted.
Of course not.
There was a specific color that she wanted. And I was like, and I just don't know how people say the chalk paint sticks and lasts, but I don't know.
You can look at ours and see.
Is yours chalk paint?
It ours is chalk paint. And there's like heavy wear areas where, especially in a kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, if you cook it all. And so, you know, the moisture, the oils, the what have you, mm-hmm. So there is some wear with those heavy areas, and you try to
We've got one spot above our stove. There's the vent above the stove, yep. And then above that, there's
that
some cabinets.
That area tends
and
to
that,
get
that the, tends to be an area where you get oil residues off of the food, and so you gotta clean it. And some of the paint has come off.
Yeah. And maybe I'm too tough of a cleaner with it.
But I mean, I would recommend to anyone just at least get new cabinet faces.
Yeah.
And I have a little slush fund that I'm saving. So there's grant money for Kelsey to get new cabinet faces. Yeah. Because, you know, they're still young and starting out, but you know, it's funny. Yeah. Somebody didn't screw on one of the cabinet doors. I don't know. They couldn't find the screws. I don't know what happened. And it just fell off yesterday. She didn't even know it wasn't screwed on until it fell off.
It was just hanging up there?
It was just stuck enough to the hinge. I don't know. And it just fell off.
Well, and that it's funny. And I think the show demonstrates this a lot. There are so many things that, because you walk into, it's an older home. People have done stuff to it.
Right.
But to see what they've done.
Yep.
And that's, you know, our oldest daughter, Angela, bought her first house last year. Close to the, you know, same neighborhood.
Right.
And, the little things, and it's like,
it just what
were
why?
They thinking right. when they did that? You know, it was like, yeah.
Well, you know, one person's dream kitchen or bathroom is another person's nightmare.
Yeah.
And that it's just, that's just true. Yeah. Like when you trick out your kitchen to your taste.
Yes.
No one else has.
Well, and that's a constant conversation we've been having because I would love to downsize. I'm ready to.
Yeah, you can.
I'm ready.
If you want to find us a house over around the Garfield Park area, and fix it up for us, then Nancy would be all about that.
I'll tell you
that.
The different neighborhoods, but yeah, I'd be ready to go. But it's like, I don't know. I'm just at that place. I'm ready. I don't know that Mike's 100% ready, so that's fine.
No, you know what I'm going to tell you, Mike and Nancy? So I did downsize a year ago in April. I moved from my main house, which was 1,800 square feet, which isn't that big comparatively. That's into the carriage house, which is 700 square feet. And it was the best thing I've ever done. I have so
hear
much.
That, Mike?
But you know, because I was the one who cleaned the house and I did the laundry and I did the dishes, and there is so much less work, like so much less, because it's such a small space. And like, if the floor's a little crappy, it literally takes me 3 minutes to vacuum.
Yeah.
You know, and I just, there's so much less work. And because it's so much smaller, I just feel lighter. I have fewer clothes. I have fewer shoes. Fewer shoes is hard for me. Okay.
That's the one area.
That's my thing. But I just have less stuff and I just feel better in the world and I make less trash. And the other thing I did is my son and his wife and their four kids, dog and hamster, moved into the big house when Kelsey moved out. And because they have four kids, I didn't want my son and his wife to have any anxiety about the kids falling in the pond.
I wonder why you did that.
Yeah. I didn't have any anxiety about the kids falling in the pond. These are smart kids. And the little one, the baby girl, she comes up with her brothers into my carriage house and there is a ladder to the loft space and she climbs to the top of the ladder with no fear. Right? Jack and Charlie still want me there to make sure they're okay. They're fine, but they want me there. She's like, she's going, I got to catch up with her because her idea about how to come down is to just let go. She's like, this will be fine. I'll just slide down the ladder. I'm like, no, this isn't how we do it. So I'm not worried about them falling in. I'm not, but also there's a level of anxiety that parents have about raising their children. And they feel like part of their job is to not let them die.
Right. Uh-huh.
So I'm going to fill in the pond.
Yeah.
My estimate is that I moved about 50 cubic yards of soil. Man. Because I had to buy
that's
dirt.
Labor.
And yeah, you know what? I wish I could show you my biceps
right
now.
You got
right
some
now,
guns?
But I got a long sleeve shirt I can't show you. I am in the best shape I've ever been in. And not only 50 yards of dirt, but there's rock all the way around the pond. And there's a wall at the back of the waterfall. And I had to move all of that. And now it's all filled in and I'm growing clover. And what was the point of that story? Oh,
downsizing.
Downsizing. Yeah. And you know what? No one was going to buy that house with that pond because it's one in a million who wants a pond like
right.
that. So filling that in, eventually I'm going to sell the whole thing and I'll move into, you know, a little yurt on one of my kids' properties and this will make it easier. So just life is getting easier and easier
and
easier.
I would like to make that decision to downsize, to go where I want to go. When I can still make that decision.
Yes. I watched my mother make bad decisions and I learned from them because when she was in her 60s, if she had moved into a community where she didn't have to take care of the yard and where there were options to move her to the next thing that she needed, like there's a cafeteria that'll make your food for you, she would have been in much better shape. Mm-hmm. But she's just a tough, independent lady. Yeah. So I get it. She lived her life the way she wanted to. Good for her. So yeah, make those decisions now. Yes. I've been very happy. And Mike, you will not be unhappy. Because when you think about how much space in this house you actually use, right? There are rooms all you do is walk through.
Yeah, you know,
you don't even walk into them for a month.
It's not about not wanting to downsize. It's wanting to do it the way that makes sense for us financially. And also, there are certain things that we need space for.
We won't go as small as you.
We both work from home.
So we need office space. We need, right.
And I would love to have a space where I could do more sound work. You know,
sure.
I want to create kind of a dedicated sound room so I can maybe do some voiceover work, things like that. Maybe some other podcasting kind of things. And so I need some space like that. And so.
So basically you need a 4-bedroom, but you really only need 1 bathroom.
I'd like to have a bath and a half.
Sure, bath and a half.
I would like to at least have the main floor be, I could just live there if I needed to.
Uh-huh.
Bedroom, bathroom.
Yes.
Because as you get older, you think of those things.
That's why I'm living now with the spiral staircase to the second floor.
Yeah.
All my kids are like, get mom out of there. Yeah. She's going to fall down that staircase and she's going to be dead at the bottom.
And we could do a 3-bedroom if we had other space that's more like a general purpose or maybe like a finished basement or semi-finished.
Sure. Yeah,
something where we could put some of the other stuff.
We go every once in a while. We go up, we'll see a house that's open and we'll go and
we had a couple that we were like, yeah, we like this one.
And probably the thing that's keeping me from pushing it is I got to deal with the stuff in this house. And I'm doing it little by little.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
we got a lot to deal with here.
When I downsized for 2 months before that, I had a sale on Facebook.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everybody paid in advance through Venmo. And then the day of the quote unquote sale, they showed up
and picked it up,
up their thing and left. And it was a lot of work.
Yeah.
And even after all that happened, like I've gotten rid of the couch that I had because it turned out it's just not the right couch in this space. It doesn't look right. It doesn't bring me joy. And so there's been a lot, it's a lot of work.
Well,
a lot.
I think traditionally, I think about like my parents or that generation or whatever would think, well, I'm handing this down. And there's certain things that, I absolutely wanted of my parents. I don't think my children, there's some things they want, but the culture's different.
Yeah.
Our kids don't want, there's a couple things they want here or there. And as they want it now, I'm like, here, take it, take it now.
I've got a couple things from my dad that I'm like, what am I going to do with this? Because I kept it because it was my dad's, but I'm pretty sure my daughters don't want this.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I have some things of my mom's they collected hippos. So I have several hippos around the house that are little mementos. But I didn't keep the entire collection because there were thousands of hippos, right? Like I kept a few favorites that were very special to her or to me. Like I gave her a Baccarat hippo 1 year. So she made sure I got that back.
That you got that one.
Right. So
that's funny. My mom collected elephants.
Isn't it weird?
And everybody, the whole family was in last Thanksgiving from all across the country and all the grandkids and great grandkids. We pulled that box out and she was able to, here, let's you pick out what elephant you would like from grandma and stuff, which was cool for them to do that.
And Nancy actually collects some hippos herself.
Yeah, I like hippos. Angela's in Africa right now.
Oh, you're going to get some good hippos.
She yesterday, now I didn't get confirmation today because the internet's been spotty where they're at. But yesterday she said, I think we're going to see some live hippos today.
That's exciting.
Yes.
You know, they're
dangerous.
They're very dangerous. Yeah.
They're my spirit animal. If I could be any animal, I'd be a hippo.
And Nancy's dangerous.
You don't want to catch her when she's on the warpath, right?
Nope. So what else is going on in your world?
Well, speaking of downsizing, let's see, I have a bad habit. I'm going to try and make this story short. I tend to adopt the dreams of my significant other to the detriment of my own dreams. And 20, 30 years ago, there used to be a travel club in Indianapolis called Ambassadeur.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they had these things called mystery trips.
Yes.
And they would tell you, this is the kind of weather we're going to. Bring these kind of clothes and you'd go for a day.
My parents used to do that.
Yeah. You get on the plane in the morning, you go to a place, spend a day there and then come home. Well, I went to Wilmington, North Carolina and I fell in love.
It is a cool town.
And every time I've ever been to North Carolina, I have said, this is where I want to retire because The climate is perfect.
Yes.
It's not too hot. It's not too cold. They get winter, but it's not like Indiana winter. And you can grow rosemary in the ground in Wilmington, North Carolina. And that's my acid test for climate. Can I grow rosemary in the ground? Which any gardener will know what that means. And I'm not explaining it to the rest of you.
Okay, go, go Google.
And my husband and I separated and he's living in Florida now. And I thought, oh, I no longer have to adopt his dream of living on a sailboat. I get super seasick. We haven't figured out how to not do that. So I don't know why I adopted that dream. What's my dream for retirement? I'm going to go to Wilmington and see if I still want to retire there. So I did. And I did. So I did. So in January, I went to Wilmington. I got a hotel room, flew in, Ubered to the hotel, walked everywhere, got on Zillow, found a house in my kind of neighborhood, hookers and blow all day. Houses are just sad. There is a sign on the pole next to my house underneath the camera that says, you drug dealers, we're the police. We're watching you. Like literally
right
that's
there.
That's how straightforward the sign is. We are watching you. We know what you're doing. And it's just my kind of neighborhood. So I bought this little house, not sight unseen. I did walk to it and I looked in the windows and found the realtor and we closed in February. And no, when did we close? But I went back, went back in February and Corey, here's a sad story. Corey hooked me up with a guy. He said, you know, this guy can help you in Wilmington. So I meet with the guy and his contractor and this is what I want to do. I know I live in Indianapolis, but I'm going to come here like once a month and we're going to do the demo. We're going to reframe it. We're going to get this all done so that by cold weather in Indy,
you have a place.
I have a roof over my head, right? That's all I need. I need walls and a roof. I don't need the insulation. I don't need the water. I do need the windows and the doors, but I need walls and a roof. You know, it needs to be closed in because the rest of it I can manage. I can survive. Because right now I'm going to go stay in a tent in my backyard.
in that neighborhood.
And, no, you know what? I meet all the people. I say hello. Yep. You're not a drug dealer because you're a bad person. It's a business decision. And you are somebody's child, somebody's parent, somebody's sibling, somebody's aunt, uncle, niece, nephew. There are good things about you. And I don't need to judge you because there's a God in heaven who will do that. And I don't need to do that job, right?
You have enough things to do.
I got plenty of stuff on my own plate to figure out for myself. I don't need to figure out your plate. So I can just accept who you are and where you are and be kind to you and give you the grace you need. And it's remarkable how that comes back. Like when Mina and I did our very first house, I don't know if I've told you this story, but the neighbors across the street were drug dealers and they're out there 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Doesn't matter the weather, serving their customers. Now, whether it's legal, illegal, moral, immoral, that's not what I'm talking about. They were good neighbors. They watched out for us. No one ever broke into our house and they said hello to us. And we always brought them a plate when we had people over and we're fixing food, always brought them a plate. When they did eventually get arrested, we saved their dogs, which had got left inside the house by the police, and made sure that they got adopted out. And, you know, they had to face the consequences of their actions, but they don't have to face them from me.
Right. You know, I think we would all be better off if we all had more of a perspective like that. Yeah. People look at folks who do different things and make a lot of judgments because they're not just like them.
And I don't know how you got to the point you are. I haven't walked in your shoes. So,
Right.
I remember when Nancy and I first got married, our second night together was spent in the middle of Kentucky. I guess it was a Knight's Inn or
Knight's Inn with lovely purple crushed velvet.
Yeah, what a crazy place. I don't know why.
We randomly picked that, but yeah.
So at any rate, I'm checking in. I'm in the office checking in and this biker gang pulls in and they're checking in at the same time. And the guy looked at me, he looks at me and he goes, you know, and I'm like, yeah, I'm here with my wife on our honeymoon. And he looks at the clerk and he goes, put us all the way in the back as far away from them as possible.
Very kind.
He's trying to be thoughtful.
That's
so sweet. Yeah, because a lot of us have ideas about what biker clubs are.
Yeah.
And I've never been a member of a biker club. And I've never been to one of their establishments. Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
Yeah. You know. Well, I had a friend from high school who was in a biker gang. Yeah. He was in, I think he may have been the Outlaws. I mean, it was one of the serious biker gangs. He was one of the nicest guys all the way back to high school. He was in the biker gang by the time he was a senior in high school. Huh. But he was one of the nicest guys. I loved being around him. The last time I saw him was 2006 at a high school reunion. And we sat for hours and he told us stories and he got out. He got out of the gang eventually.
Some of them, it was like, oh, that would be hard to. Yeah.
Some of the stories were crazy, mm-hmm. but you know, every time I have met someone from that culture, they've been very, very friendly and very, very nice. Do I like everything they do? Well, no, but I don't like everything I do.
Yeah. Me either.
Me either. And that's where the grace comes from, right?
Yes. Right. Yes. Right.
Give it to yourself, give it to others.
Yeah.
So is the house in Wilmington done? Do you have the roof and walls?
No, because the first contractor, who will remain nameless, made no progress. Uh-huh. Zero progress. And I don't understand why. I have no idea. So I started thrashing around. I asked my friends on social media, could you give me some recommendations? So two more contractors, and the first one gave me a bid for the demo, $32,000. It's a 500 square foot house. And I know it's North Carolina and it's not my backyard and I don't know how things work, but I was like, hey, we need to talk about this because this seems a little high to me and maybe there's a reason that I don't know.
Right.
And he said, oh, never mind. I can't do it anyway. I was like, okay. So then another contractor and he says, well, you know, I'm real busy, but okay, fine. I'll do it. And I email him. He says, I'll meet you there on Friday. And then crickets. So, I make a trip to my little house in Wilmington in June. We go on an annual family vacation every year in South Carolina. So mm-hmm. I now have an EV. Have I talked to you about this?
No, no. I was curious about that because you had the electric bike and now you got the electric car.
I do. So. I've been trying to have an electric car for a long time and I finally just bit the bullet. And I found someone in Indianapolis who had an EV that would work for me and bought it. And it wasn't like, oh, I did a lot of research and you know, no, it was here and I bought it. So I have a Kia Niro and it's a 4-door with a hatchback. And I have this thing called a car camper. It's made by a guy in Germany and it's an aluminum cot that's made to go in the back of a hatchback. So it has two long legs that go in the wheel well of the backseat passenger. And then two short legs when you flip the back seats down that go on the deck of the hatch. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
And then it's got black pallet wood and then it's got a mattress. And so you got this little bed and underneath of it is my portable toilet and my pop-up tent so that I can go to the toilet in private. Because when you drive an EV, you're plugged in somewhere public.
Yeah,
right? That's true. And a lot of times there's no bathroom. Uh-huh. It's not a 24-hour, you're at a car dealership in their parking lot and it's 8 p.m. and they're closed, but you can plug in and, you know, it's not always easy to find a place to go to the bathroom in a car dealership parking lot. So I'm prepared. I also have my little jet boil, which is something backpackers will recognize because it's a little tiny cook stove. And I have a folding chair and I have a little folding table, got my pillow, my blankets, got my dog, got all my food under there. I got a cooler. It's great. So, I'd done a shakedown trip in February. If you follow me on social media,
I do.
You saw that I didn't just get two flat tires. I got two destroyed wheels.
Oh no.
Entirely my fault. I hit a pothole. I was going too fast for the road conditions. Mm-hmm. I couldn't see far enough ahead of me. I was going around a curve and I was hugging the inside too close and gunk, gunk. And now I'm dead. My car can't go anywhere because even if I had a spare, which a lot of new vehicles don't come with.
Really?
And this one doesn't. Hmm. You get a airing up kit. It wouldn't have mattered because I destroyed my rims. Right. I can't drive on them.
Right.
So I call Kia customer assistance and they say, well, where you are in West Virginia, there are no tow trucks. I said, wait, no tow trucks for how long? Well, we can't find one at all. So I'm like, well, I have my bed. I'm next to a creek. So I can, and I got water and I'm fine for days. This is fine. Someone's going to figure it out. I'll be fine. City workers come by and I said, hey, you guys are local. Do you know someone who could tow my car? And they said, no, but we know Bob.
Yeah.
Bob's got a shop down the road and I bet he knows someone who can tow it. So they call Bob and Bob sends, I wish I could remember his name, John or Jack, who is not a tow truck driver, but he has a truck and he has a flatbed trailer and he knows how to get my car on it.
There.
And so like we're by this little tiny creek in the middle of nowhere and this guy shows up in this janky old truck and he gets me up there and I get in the cab with him and for just a half a second I think I'm going to die.
Right, right. Because there's a lot of hills and hollers
that's
there.
That's what
in
I
West
just
Virginia.
Decided today, to die. And then I see this picture of this beautiful woman on his steering wheel. I says, is that your boo? And he just, his face all goes soft. Aww. He's like, yeah, I love her so much. We're still newlyweds. And like, I'm not going to die. Nobody who loves their wife this much kills anyone. We're fine. And it was weird that I even thought for a second that I'm going to die. Because that never happens to me. But all my kids have put
in
my head.
Right. You got to be careful, mom. You got to do this. You gotta, yeah.
Because normally that wouldn't even enter my mind. But they've been on me about it. And he gets me to Bob's and those boys at Bob's, they heat up my rims and they bang them out. And you know what Bob has that my Kia dealership doesn't? Two brand new Kia tires in
stock.
Shut
up.
EV tires are different. They're not like regular tires because EVs are so much heavier. And he puts, and it was $500. And there is no way that's what I would have paid at the dealership. No way. And I'm back on the road in like half an hour.
Wow.
The universe loves me.
Well,
it
good.
Really wants me to get to North Carolina today.
Yeah.
So that was fun. In any case, I got there and that was my first trip in February. Then I went again in June on the way to family vacation. And this is another story that the universe loves me. I get there and I'm driving an EV and it's a camper. And so I like to find places to park where I can charge overnight. And there's this little community. I don't want to say the name of it in case anyone's listening to this because they have a sales office community center that they do not lock. Like, and it's got people's purses and it's got all the swag that they give to people who buy the houses in this little community. I mean, it's just unlocked. And I'm not a person you have to worry about that's going to destroy anything or steal anything.
I'm sitting here, my face is like, you're kidding me.
But I think it's Wilmington still feels very small town and people are very used to that. Yeah. And this division is very, it's a little out of the way. So they just don't expect anybody to just walk in. But, you know, I had a bathroom, a porcelain toilet that I could use all night and I could wash up in the sink. It was great. I could charge my phone. It's fantastic. And I had made an error on this trip. I brought the wrong kind of cooler. It wasn't keeping anything cold. It had failed me.
Uh-oh.
So I was like, well, I'm going to have to go to a big box store and get myself a new cooler. Now, wait. I'm going to be a resident of Wilmington. I'm not going to the big box store. I'm going to find my local hardware store, and I'm going to start patronizing my local hardware store. The reason I thought about the big box store, because here in Indy, I could go to a big box store, and I could find myself a contractor.
Yeah, that's true.
And that's what I was thinking is I'm just going to go to a big box store and I'm going to find a contractor because three have failed me so far, but there's one working. There's one and he's in one of those big box stores and I'm going to find him and I'm going to give him some money and he's going to start working on my house. So I go to the little, I think it's an Ace hardware store. It's 8 blocks from my house and I make friends with everyone there. I said, hey, do you guys know any contractors? And I'm in line checking out with my Yeti cooler. It's the only thing they had. It broke my heart to spend that much money on a cooler. But
the
it was
Yeti's
it.
A good
cooler. It's a good cooler. It kept that ice cold for a week. And she goes, yeah, I'll write you a list. And she's writing the list. And I look at the man in line behind me and I said, I'm so sorry. No one should ever get in line behind me anywhere. I have a problem. They're going to be here for a minute. And she says, Lisa says, oh, no, don't worry. It's Sean. He's on the list. And she's pointing to the list as I'm looking at Sean. And I was like, oh, Sean, your situation just got way worse. You're not just in line behind me here in the store, but in life, you're now. And Sean carried my Yeti cooler to the car, and he went with me to my little house, and we walked through the whole thing, and we had a lovely conversation, and his business partner came over, and Sean said all the things I want to hear from a contractor. Because I don't know everything about building a house. But I know enough to know.
You've learned a lot.
I've learned a lot. And I know enough to know when someone's being stupid. Mm-hmm. I do know that. Mm-hmm. I know about plumb level and square. And I know about we start with the foundation.
Right.
And what Sean said, these are the words that got him hired. Well, what we really need to do is we need to do our demo first. And then we need to reconvene and discuss what we have found. Yes, that is what we need to do. That was the very first thing on my list that I sent to the three other contractors who just ignored me.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, Sean, you're hired. how much money do I need to give you to hire you? And he was a little taken aback.
Yeah.
Because he's like, but you didn't, let me show you something I'm working on.
Right.
And let's talk a little more, meet my business partner, because he really takes his job seriously and his dedication to his clients is amazing. And he practices a radical honesty that I would love to see more people practice. Mm. I've had to reel in my radical honesty.
Imagine that.
But he had a substance abuse problem. And part of the solution to that problem is to tell the truth. Just tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
If you're struggling, you say, I'm struggling. If you need help, you say, I need help. If you don't know, you say, I don't know. And I actually think that's the whole solution.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Life is hard.
Mm-hmm.
Life is hard. And some people use a substance because they think it's going to make life a little easier for a minute, and it ends up not. Mm-hmm. But he has been clean for 8 years. He has custody of his kids. His mom lives with him. She used to work the business and physically can't do it anymore. He has a business partner who is also an accountability partner. And that he told me this within the first couple hours of meeting him. Like, that has to be the hardest thing that you say to people. Mm-hmm. He says it is. And the hardest thing is when they tell me to get out of their house.
Yeah.
That still hurts.
I bet.
Yeah.
Because he is a smart guy. He's a dedicated guy. He is a hardworking guy. And I'm really excited as having him a partner. I'm just so excited.
Excellent.
So I'm going to get on a plane Monday morning and fly to Wilmington. And Sean and I are going to do demo.
Oh, awesome.
It's going to be super fun. Super fun. I'm very, very excited.
Well, we have people. We have multiple people in Wilmington. So if you need a place to plug in at some point in the future.
That is good to know. I am packing my tent. And I'm going to pack an air mattress, not because I blow it up, but because it creates a moisture barrier between me and the ground.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I discovered we've hiked sections of the Appalachian Trail, and I like sleeping on the ground.
Do you?
It's like a giant foam roller for your body. You're sore from hiking all day. You sleep on the ground. You feel fine in the morning. Mm. I love sleeping on the ground. So going to pitch my tent. Not sure yet where I'm going to clean up. I feel like there's a gas station restroom close by that's going to become my best friend. Because I cannot bear to spend $150 to $200 to sleep at night.
Right.
I think about the shoes I could buy for that money that I will have for the rest of my life. And I just can't spend it on a hotel room. I can't do it.
Well, Karen, I hate to do this, but we've been going for an hour and 6 minutes.
Oh, my goodness.
Hour and 7 minutes already. And, you know, it's so much fun when you're here because it's just like sitting around the living room having a conversation. And
I feel the same way. I feel like you guys are my oldest and best friends.
We are. We are your oldest best friends. But yeah, you know, this has been everything I hoped it would be, and it's been awesome to be together with you again on the podcast. Anything you want to share before we move over to the random questions?
I just if you haven't watched Good Bones, I really think season 8 is the season to watch, because I have no idea what's going to happen, and I'm really excited for it. I have not been as excited for a season before this one. So
is there anything that, you know, hindsight's 2020, is there anything you would go back and tell Karen from the very beginning and the first episode based on where you're at now and how you've gotten to season 8?
The problem is she wouldn't have listened.
Well,
because
there is that.
you have to go through the experience. For the first 6 seasons, I kept asking myself, why did the universe put me here? There's a lesson. There's a reason I'm doing this, and I need to stay till I figure it out. And then I had a day in season 7 where I really, really, really fell apart, because I watched an episode and was very, very, very disappointed in what I saw. We don't need to go in. And I was so sad and hurt. And those are not good emotions for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there are people who go through life sad, and I'm like, how do you do that?
Right. Can't stay there. You're going to go through it.
Right.
But,
and I think because as a kid with alcoholic parents, sad and hurt were not emotions you're allowed to have. You had to just always be happy and pleasant and ready to do whatever they wanted. And so sad wasn't something I practiced, and hurt was definitely not something I practiced, because you didn't want to go there. I told them I need a day. I need a day. I can't process this. I'm trying and it's not working. It's just getting worse. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't give me a day. So I showed up to work the next day, and they sent me home. And I just found out that that was the day they were talking about giving me a spinoff. But because I looked like I behaved so badly, they said, well, we can't build a show around her. She can't do it. Mm. And I didn't know any of that till yesterday. But what I learned from that experience was how I look to the world and how I feel inside are two completely different things. I look like a child having a tantrum. And that was not what was happening. And it is not TV's job to meet my emotional needs.
Right.
It is not. It is no job's job to meet your emotional needs. Mm-hmm. That's my job. Mm-hmm. And I need to adjust my attitude and I need to figure out how this works for me. So season 8 was the season I figured that out. And if you had asked me in the beginning of season 7, do you want to keep doing this? I would have said no. And now we're on hiatus.
Right.
And I want to keep doing it in the worst way. TV has become home for me and I understand how it works and I understand what I love about it. And I know how I'm beginning to know how to do it well. Mm-hmm. Like I know how to be directed because even for reality TV, there is direction.
Yes. Yes.
Like, you
there's
know,
bumpers.
Right. Exactly. You know, we look at the camera. Yeah. We don't need to see your butt. We need to see your face, you know, things like that. And I really, really, really want to keep doing it. I really like it. So that while we're on hiatus, I'm like, no, what do I do? What do I do? So if my younger self would have listened, I would have explained to her about TV and how you need to be a grown up and you need to figure out what you're feeling. You need to deal with it yourself and you need to be professional. And you need to give everybody else the grace that you need. Mm-hmm. Like, and no, you know, no stirring the pot where you're just sharing gossip and all that. Just help lift people.
Right.
You know, if somebody else is having a bad day, help them have a better day. That sort of thing. And you know, my alcoholic upbringing would have, if I hadn't been working through it and letting go of it, like right. if I had just been still in the midst of that, I would have been great. But I think at some point it would have fallen apart.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think, and you know, my mom passed and I think I've come full circle in recognizing my emotional patterns and how they don't always serve me. Mm-hmm. So there are all these arrows in my quiver that I can use. So that old behavior that came out all the time, even was a dysfunctional, I still have those behaviors and I can use them when they're useful.
Right.
And I've put a bunch more arrows in there that I can use when I need them. So
Well, it's that self-awareness. Mm-hmm. I recently have rolled into a new position within the same company. And when I first started dealing with some things, it's like, I was trying to do things that really weren't my jam, my strength. And so I had to stop and pull back and look at the team and say, okay, what's made us successful up to this point? Here's my niche. I'm this person.
Yes.
You're that person. You're that person. And together, We do well.
We make the team. Yeah. Exactly.
So once I pulled back, it was like less stress.
Yes.
Everything with the team seemed to pull together better.
It's that perfectionism and thinking you have to do everything.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
yeah.
We don't.
No.
And we do ourselves and our team a disservice. And when you watch the show, what's great about it is the ensemble.
Yes.
It really
it
is.
It is a great ensemble.
And I just love leaning on Corey or Austin or Tad or MJ or Mina for the things they're good at.
Right. You right. know?
And then we can all have more fun.
Yeah.
So I guess I would have told my younger self, you'll grow up someday.
I feel like that's a lie sometimes, right? Personally, it's like, you'll grow up.
Growing up, I think.
Or the connotation of growing up.
Out of it.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
The connotation.
We all grow.
Yes.
And the question is, in what direction are we growing? And I ask myself all the time, how does this serve me? Mm. When I'm engaging in a behavior or I have a thought, whatever it is, how does this serve me? Mm-hmm. Is it moving me in the direction that I want to grow?
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not serving me.
Yeah.
Well, let's move into the random questions.
All right.
All right.
We have a couple of boxes here.
I'm going to let you make the choices.
Oh, well, I know what Nancy's going to do if you're going to do that.
I'm going to shuffle some and see if there's some good choices.
While she's shuffling, having the grandkids, there's this game they had at their Airbnb because they had to wait a week for all their goods to show up. So they stayed in an Airbnb because they had no goods. And there was a game called Dragonwood. We've been playing Dragonwood nonstop in my little carriage house. And there's a lot of shuffling. There's a lot of shuffling. Well, and there's some cheating. These boys are some cheaters. Like, you're only supposed to have 9 cards. They'll have 11 cards. Like, what are you guys doing? I don't think they're doing it on purpose, although maybe, I don't know.
They're probably not. Yeah. So
I will give you a card. There are 3 questions on it. Okay. You can choose which one that we all have to answer.
Oh, that we all have to answer.
Yes, we all have to answer, but you have to answer first. So
The first question is, would you enjoy, I'm going to let everybody know the questions because I think that's important to know
what I'm choosing.
Yeah. Would you enjoy sharing a meal with your clone? What is the one key trait that makes successful people successful? What was the name of your first serious crush? Well, the name of your first serious crush is such an easy, I mean, that's an easy one. That's so easy.
But you could tell about them a little if you
but
want.
But it's not the question.
Yeah, that's not true. The question.
Because, you know, we could all say the name of our first crush, Vince, easy peasy, right?
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah.
Actually, probably wasn't Vince.
I've actually shared my name of my first crush
on here
anyway.
Yeah, you have before.
So that's too easy.
Yeah.
I feel like the toughest one is what is the one, because again, would you enjoy sharing a meal with your clone? That's yes or no.
Yeah.
Whereas what is the one key trait that makes successful people successful? It is a one word answer, but we have to think about it a lot. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're going with. We're going to make everybody think this morning.
Oh, goodness.
We've all had our caffeine. We're all ready. We got our thinking caps on. What is the one key trait that makes successful people successful? I know.
All right, go for it.
Okay, I'm going to go first. Curiosity. Because I think curiosity drives learning and growth and change. And to be successful, you have to be nimble. You have to be able to grow and change, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think. What do you think?
Nancy? Yeah, Mike. We both try to get there first because you don't have an answer, right?
I got you this time. I went first. I do have a couple answers, but I got you first this time.
I'm still noodling that one a bit because I think you're right. It does make you think. Uh-huh. And it's from what I perceive successful people and then defining success.
Yeah.
What is success?
You know, is it money? Is it fame? Is it, you know, is it none of the above? You know, like.
I look at all my kids and they all have, I feel like they're all successful because they have found a path in life that is uniquely suited to their talents and their urges, whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. So they've taken whatever their DNA, their early environment gave them, and they found a way to earn a living doing that. And they earn a living doing something that, it's not a job. Mm-hmm. It's an expression of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been able to raise their families on that income. And I mean, they're just happy, healthy people. And they seem very successful to me. I don't think it's about being rich or being famous.
Right, right.
Or any of those things. I think it's about finding your way in the world.
Mm.
That's what I think. Mm-hmm. And since I'm the guest, I win.
You get to. Yeah, we go with your definition for that.
Well, I will go.
You should give me, give me a couple more seconds.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that there is one. I think it's more like a blend. Like there's a...
Right. But this is a forced answer.
Yes.
You got to pick one.
The one I'm going to go with, I think, is vision.
Oh.
I think it goes right along the lines of your curiosity.
Uh-huh.
But you've got to be able to have a vision of what could be.
Uh-huh.
And a lot of times people, if they don't actually have a vision for where they want to be or where they want to go or what they want to see, then they don't ever take the steps necessary to move in that direction. One of the sayings that I think in fact, I'm sure I created it. and whether it makes any sense or not, I don't know. You guys can decide, but it goes something like this. Be the person today that will help you become the person you want to be tomorrow. So in other words, you know where you want to be, you know who you want to be, how you
want
to be.
It's like dressing for the job you
want. Habits, choices.
Like, yeah. Start making the changes today that will lead you to become the person that you want to be down the road.
Right.
And I think that's having that vision. So attached to your curiosity.
Yeah.
So I've the word I've thought of was flexibility.
Yeah.
Because the plans never go.
Mm-mm.
Roll with it.
You got to roll with it.
The wheel of time, adjust. Robert Jordan, the best laid plan, something, best laid plans gone when the first arrow flies.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So if you can flex, I mean, it's good to have that vision and that direction. Mm-hmm. It's good to be, you've got to be curious to go along the way and make sure you're going there. But I think you've got to be flexible when you run into that obstacle.
Is there an opportunity for people to comment on this podcast? Because I want to hear what other people think about that question and about our perception, you know, our answers. Because I feel like we're really smart. I feel like these are all really good answers, but I'm curious what other answers are out there.
Well, you know, that's interesting. There is a way. In fact, I've got spammers sending me emails through the podcast right now. But you can email me at michael@authormicheldecamp.com. That's one way. I usually post these on my Facebook page, and so they can comment,
on the
Facebook page.
Give them your email again, and we'll ask you to please send us an email. Say the subject can be Karen Part 3. and let us know what you think your one thing for success is, or if you think we're just full of hot air.
The one trait.
One trait. One
key trait.
Key trait.
That makes successful people successful.
Yes. Yeah. Email, and we can share that in a future podcast.
Yeah.
Again, the email is Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, @authormicheldecamp.com. And then you can, we'll share those with Karen.
That'd be so fun.
Yeah.
So fun.
And it'd be fun to get emails from people who listen to the podcast. That'd be fun too.
Yeah.
And not spammers.
Lately in my DMs on Instagram, I'm getting a lot of offers for sexual content. Like just lately, it just started happening in the last month.
It is weird how it works, right?
What did I say or do?
Yeah, what did I accidentally or intentionally click on, right?
Yeah, it's like, it's all these services, they wanting to help me grow my podcast. And they've got this and they've got that. And, you know, check our website out, da, da, da. You're unsolicited. I don't really know who you are. And I'm not clicking on that link. Mm-mm. You know, I'm just not going to do it. Mm-mm. So if you're out there and you really are a spammer and you're not a spammer and you want to help me, well, you can reach out to me, but do it legitimately. I just gave you the email address. You got to prove yourself. You got to prove who you are.
Yeah.
If you want me to respond.
So send us that. But one last time, what's the date of season 8 airing again?
Season 8, Good Bones, HGTV, August 15th, 9 p.m. Eastern.
All right.
Watch it. It's going to be so much fun. Very cool. You've never heard me say that before on this podcast.
No, we have. You've had fun moments.
Right.
To say, yeah.
I'm very excited to see how this season comes out. I feel like there's going to be a lot of surprises for everyone.
Very cool. Good. Very cool. And the cool thing about this episode is it's going to come out in advance of that. So it'll be out there before.
Oh, excellent.
Karen, thank you so much for coming out. And I want to also thank you in front of God and the whole world for coming to my book launch last year. That really meant a lot to me for you to be there.
And it was very special. The people that came out and were supportive, and
we appreciate you being there with your neighbor,
your friend.
Yeah, so that was
lovely.
That was really cool.
She's lovely. And you know what? She knows how to manage herself, because a lot of times when we hang out together, people co-opt me.
Right.
And we had a little of that.
Yeah. And she can figure out her own situation. So that worked out great.
So thank you so much for that and being part of this, this episode. And, we'll keep bringing you back as long as you're willing and people seem interested. So
I feel like we need to get both of you mental health diagnoses.
That's
probably been attempted in the past. Karen, when I asked Karen to be on, she's like, are you sure people still want to hear from me?
We're not sure they want to hear from us.
And that's true, Nancy. But, you know, I told her, her episodes are some of our most popular ones. So, yeah, absolutely.
Excellent.
So thanks for being here. Thank you, Bill White,
for being
the post-production guy and all of your good work. Thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. And we'll catch you next time on the Cutter's Notch podcast.
The Cutter's Notch podcast is available through most podcast listing providers. New episodes drop approximately twice a month. You can email Michael at authormicheldecamp@gmail.com. Michael DeCamp is the author of 2 novels, Abandoned Hope, Cutter's Notch Book 1,
and Nozomi's Battle, Cutter's Notch Book 2, a collection of short stories entitled Cutter's Notch Interludes, and one nonfiction Christian devotional book entitled Loving Out Loud, Learning to Love in a Hate-Filled World. All books can be found on Amazon or ordered from your local bookseller. Please join us again on the next episode of the Cutter's Notch podcast.